Today's episode of Intermittent Fasting Stories is sponsored by Plated. I have been using Plated since 2016, and over that time, I have prepared 1,092 plates, mastered 367 unique recipes, and conquered 586 unique ingredients. Plated is perfect for intermittent fasters because their subscription plans are super flexible, and let's face it, we want our meals to be delicious. Who has time for a mediocre dinner? Not me. Plated allows me to choose from 20 chef-designed dinner and dessert options each week, allowing us to sit down to an amazing dinner each night together as a family. Experience your own meals worth making. Go to plated.com/ifstories to save $80. You'll get $20 off for your first 4 weeks. Terms apply. See plated.com/ifstories for details. That's plated.com/ifstories. Welcome to Intermittent Fasting Stories. I'm your host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. I lost over 80 pounds thanks to intermittent fasting after learning how to delay my eating rather than deny myself the delicious foods I want to eat. Now, who's ready to hear an inspirational intermittent fasting story? That's why we're here, so let's get excited to talk to today's guest. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 53 of Intermittent Fasting Stories. This is pretty exciting because 53 means we are officially into our second year. And so today I've got a special guest. His name is Alex. Alex is from Oxford in the UK, and he runs a headhunting company and also works as an actor and does voiceover work. So welcome, Alex.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
I am doing great. I hope that you're also doing well.
Yes, well, greetings from a wet and rainy Britain. I understand it's quite warm over where you are.
It is. We're recording this in early in the month, and it is still in the 90s, which is, I did the math, it's like 33.8 degrees. Do you say centigrade or Celsius?
We are centigrade.
Okay. We call it Celsius. We just can't do anything the same way.
Yeah. Anything above 18 Celsius in the UK, and basically things start to shut down. So we wouldn't be able to cope with your heat, unfortunately.
It's pretty hot for October, but the cool down is on the way. We know it's coming. When the night starts getting dark earlier, we know it's going to happen.
I say, the next thing we've got is the trick-or-treaters.
Right.
Which we seem to have learned from you guys.
Yeah, we sure do love our trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
And then after that, it'll be Christmas everywhere. It's already in the stores. Do y'all start having Christmas displays in all the stores really early?
Oh, it's everywhere already. Just there's just signs like reserve your table at this pub, and you know, Christmas is around the corner, and you know, surprise your relatives for Christmas. So, you know, it's just an endless.
The season is beginning earlier and earlier.
Yeah. But you know, there you go.
Well, anyway, it's really good to have you here today. And as you know, I like to start by asking what brought you to intermittent fasting and when was that? So tell us a little bit about your story.
I first heard about like an eating window, if you like, about 5 or 6 years ago, because my brother basically adopted it. And he was doing this. He said, oh, yeah, all I do is I eat what I like in a 5-hour eating window every day. And I kind of thought, well, aren't you supposed to be eating like 8 meals a day and keeping your metabolism going, that sort of thing, and yeah. Blah, 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 blah. He lost weight on it. And I think at the time, there wasn't the same sort of critical mass about the whole idea of intermittent fasting that there is now. So I kind of looked at it, well, yeah, okay, works for him. And I sort of tried it half-heartedly for about a week. And thought, no, I can't do this. I'm ruining my metabolism. I kind of gave up, and I sort of parked it for a bit. But I am somebody I played a lot of rugby at school and at college, so I've always been quite a big guy, and I've always been very active. And then I started realizing, and I'm 47 now. I started realizing probably a couple of years ago that I can't out train my diet choices, because I class myself as a volume opportunistic omnivore.
Oh, I love that. And you know what? I think that describes me too. I like volume. That yeah. I can't eat a little bit, you know, like the dainty little women you see eating this tiny little. No, I need a big meal. So I get it.
And I basically, you know, I'm terrible for walking to the kitchen. And if there's basically something lying around, you know, my hand just goes out and grabs it. And basically it could be pretty much anything. So being a grazer all the time, and I would think, well, look, you know, I'll go out on the bike, I'll go out to the gym, I'll play some squash, you know, I'll do some weights, I'll burn it off, no problem. And then you just can't. And I think I kept trying to kid myself, and then eventually it just starts creeping up. And it slowly creeps up, and then slowly the trousers get a bit tighter, and then slowly found myself going clothes shopping. Whereas before, I'd go to the trouser section. I'm a big guy, so I was used to kind of digging around the back of the trouser bit, you know, where the trousers hang on the rail, because that's where the bigger sizes are. But it was getting to the point now where I was kind of hitting the biggest sizes. And in fact, I was having to sort of actually submerge myself into the clothes rail to go right to the back of the thing. I thought, Christ, if I go any further through these clothes, I'm going to end up in Narnia. I say, all right, Aslan, you got these in a 42. Okay. So
that's so funny.
I just thought, oh no, this is, you know, but because I'm self-employed and because I kind of work for myself, and I started losing a little bit of accountability for stuff, you know, because you think, well, I spend most of my day in my shorts. I see my friends at the weekend, but, you know, they don't mind and blah, 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 blah. I don't know. The inner saboteur was always on my shoulder, I think, just saying, don't worry about it. Have a snack, have a beer. Don't worry about it. You know, it doesn't matter.
You know, it is easy to kind of push it off, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you're like, yeah, it's no big deal. You know, I had stretchy clothes when I got up to my heaviest. I wore a lot of stretchy things. And so you can kind of lie to yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
That you're not really that big. You know, oh, it's not that bad.
I remember one of my friends said to me, he'd read some article that apparently when blokes get to 45, they just stop caring. Doesn't bother, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. You know, you've got the kids, you've got the house. It's kind of, you've been in your prime. It's time to kick back, get your fat pants on and get the cakes out.
That dad bod, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the dad bod.
I was kind of sitting into all that and thinking, well, maybe it's just not for me. Maybe I'm just going to be a big guy, you know, big guy. I've even got a chef's hat with big guy on it. Honestly, and the thing I liked about your book, which I downloaded, was the fact that you had tried all these different things. You did all the stuff, and I've tried stuff as well. I've tried leaving food groups out. I've tried these weird, like, milkshake things. It all got tedious. Looking at calories and counting calories, and, you know, I think, I'm terrible at that sort. I lasted about probably, I think the longest I lasted about 2 weeks. And by the end of it, you just think, I can't do this. It's just killing me. And I've spent a lot of money on the way on stuff like, you know, programs, regimes, blah, 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 blah. And I just thought, oh, God.
Yeah, I would do that. I would throw everything away that was like not compliant and like clear everything out and then buy all this special stuff.
Yeah.
It was going to be like my special diet.
Yeah.
And then like a week later, I'm like, this is nonsense. Let's go get pizza.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember one particular low point. I think this is popular in America, actually. I was making an egg white only omelette, and it was probably the most tasteless thing I've ever eaten.
Rubbery.
Yeah. I'm just sort of pushing it around the plate with my fork, thinking, just eat it and just get it done, you know. And I think you can't live like your life like that. It's a nightmare. You know what? To be honest, about last Christmas, I hit it pretty hard in terms of taking people out for client drinks, you know, meeting people socially. Because in Britain, the run up to Christmas, probably the same with you guys, the run up to Christmas is like people start getting a bit happier. It's nearly Christmas. Go out for a few drinks, go out for some food. Mince pies are always lying around. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I got to New Year's Eve, and I hit my heaviest I'd ever been. I was about 118 kilograms. I don't know what that is in pounds, but it's about double, I think.
It is. In America, that would be 260 pounds.
Right. Okay. So I remember just standing on the scales thinking, okay, that's like, I can see where this is going. nothing really fitted anymore, my clothes. And I thought, oh, okay, I've got to do something about this. So one thing that had worked a little bit for me was going ketogenic, the ketogenic diet. So just cutting out bread and pasta and potatoes and all that stuff, all the stuff I really like.
Right.
I was thinking, right, okay, you know, I did throw myself into it. You can get these, I mean, you can basically make anything ketogenically if you want to. You can make bread ketogenically, you can make desserts ketogenically, but they're not the same.
They're not. No. Have you seen that joke? It's like a meme, and it's like, I think it's a Reese's peanut butter cup, and they say, can you make this out of cauliflower? You know, people are trying.
Yeah. So I made some things that were, you know, I mean, basically the best ketogenic thing that I think you can have is bacon and eggs, pretty much. And that's nice. And I was doing it for a bit, and I was getting some results. I was getting my head round cauliflower, which I used to hate, but I sort of was doing some stuff to it. You know, I was kind of frying it in cumin and grating some cheddar over it, and it was kind of working. And the trouble is, my wife and my two kids and the dog, and it's like, not so much a dog actually, but you're having to make separate food from everybody else, and it starts to become tedious for them because it's like,
oh yeah,
are you having this or not? You know, are you going to be eating this? Can you eat this? And you make these kind of ketogenic kind of desserts and stuff, and the kids try them and think, oh God, you know, it's just this weird xylitol stuff. And I probably wasn't doing it right. That's probably my problem. But it was getting harder and harder to maintain this kind of ketogenic diet that the rest of my family weren't on. So things started slipping. You go out for a bite to eat. You think, oh, there's nothing on it. It's really, you know, I don't want salad. I'm going to have steak and chips. So I'm going to have steak and chips. And then after a while, things start to slip. So I thought, well, where's this going? And then, so I go and see a chiropractor who doesn't do the kind of traditional kind of crunching thing, you know. He does a thing called network spinal analysis. And it's this thing where you basically lie on your front and he sort of applies pressure, but very gently to parts of your neck and spine. And it's to do with aligning your spinal cord and your brain and making sure that basically all the channels are clear to the rest of your body so that your body's kind of functioning as it should do. The nervous system is functioning as it should do. And he basically said, because I was talking about this now, I'm sick of this ketogenic diet, you know, I'm trying to lose some weight, blah, 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 blah. And he said, have you ever watched anything by Jason Fung? I said, no. And he said, right, I'll send you the video. And I watched this. It was like a 15-minute episode of him talking to an Australian medical council about the concept of fasting. And it was so simple what he was describing. I think the summary of it was you've got a fridge freezer full of food and you've got a fridge full of food. What do you do when you want to go eat something quickly? You go to the fridge. Easy, open it up, easy, have something to eat. When you get hungry again, go back to the fridge, easy. You only go to the freezer when you've got to take stuff out and you've got to thaw it and you've got to wait and you've got to, and it takes a bit more time. And he said, what you do is when you're fasting is your fat is your freezer and your glycogen levels is your fridge, basically.
Right. I love that analogy. It is such a great one.
Yeah. So use up what's in the fridge, then you start using up what's in the freezer. And I thought, that really resonated with me. And I thought, actually, okay, that makes sense. And it's perfectly logical that the human body has adapted over the whatever, how many hundreds of thousands of years to carry a bit of extra reserves in case there's a famine or you've got but not so much that you can't get away from somebody that's trying to chase you, or if you're trying to catch something that you want to kill and eat. I watched loads of his videos online. There's loads on YouTube of him giving lectures about it. And also, I've got friends that have got diabetes, type 2 diabetes. And he was just basically, I just really love the idea of if you give your body a bit of a break to do some housekeeping, it will sort itself out. Because the body is very, very resilient. It's had to be to evolve over the times of before there were shops and central heating and cars and all that sort of stuff, when you basically had to work out how to survive.
And that's just the thing that we're not doing anymore, right? We're not giving the body a break. You said early in the conversation you were eating 8 times a day to keep the metabolism stoked. And so the body literally, you're not just going to the fridge, you're standing at the fridge all day long.
It's a nightmare. I mean, before I had my office, I used to work from my kitchen. That was a nightmare, I tell you. I'd be at the fridge every 10 minutes probably. I wouldn't even be hungry, but I'd open it, look at it, shut the door, maybe give the fridge a second chance, open the door again, see what else is in there, you know? I remember thinking, like, when was the last time I was actually hungry? I actually thought, this food tastes amazing, you know, like, instead of just sort of shoveling it in whilst you're looking at your mobile or whatever.
So that was the turning point, watching those Jason Fung videos. That was what made you think, I'm going to try this.
I thought, that makes a lot of sense. It just made so much sense. I made a note of this, like, I read your Delay, Don't Deny book, and I just thought, and also I read the Bert Herring book as well that you recommended, which was a comment as well, because I just thought it's such an elegant solution to a whole load of problems that I think we are facing at the moment I was facing anyway, with regards to just this gradual mission creep of sort of weight gain, you know. It just stop. Don't do it. I perfectly understood that if I didn't eat for 16 hours, I would not die. I would be fine. It'll be a bit weird to begin with. And it was. And it's not easy, because if it was easy, everybody'd do it, wouldn't they?
Right. You know, there's still a lot of it is mental.
Yep.
Sometimes I find myself looking at the clock thinking, could I go ahead and open my window? Just because eating is still fun and enjoyable.
Yeah. And once I realized that, actually, you know what? The human body has worked out how to live without food for 12 to 16 hours. And also, and this is the other thing I'll come into later, I don't know, but I'll just put it in here now. I started examining my relationship with types of food, specifically sugar, because I was probably eating sugar every day in some form, because it's in everything. It's in everything. Unless you make stuff from scratch, and even then you might want to put some sugar in it. Unless you make stuff from scratch, there is sugar in nearly everything in a packet. I was shocked. I'm absolutely sure. Have you ever watched that film? It's called That Sugar Film.
I have watched that. Yes.
Right.
It's been a while, but I have.
Yeah. Actually, I watched it with my kids, because I wanted my kids to watch it, because I think it's important for them to understand the amount of sugar that's in everything.
How it's everywhere. Like, in how much of it. Yeah. It's a lot.
You expect it to be in kind of cakes and sauces, like tomato sauce and that sort of thing. But I've seen it in like tin soup, pasta sauce. What else did I see it in something the other day? Guacamole. There was some guacamole that I'd bought.
Oh, that's crazy.
It kind of made me examine a bit more about what sugar does as well to the sort of physiology. Because, like, I think it was the Bert Herring book where he said 200 years ago, sugar wasn't part of the diet at all. It was considered a luxury item to have sugar. You know, you certainly didn't have it every day. In the morning with your cereal, you know, in the morning, cereals are loaded with it. Orange juice is loaded with it, you know, jam and all that sort of thing. And then you have it in something in lunch and then dinner. Starting to think, actually, I'm probably eating far too much sugar. And I really started, I got some proper nasty withdrawals from not having sugar.
So when you switched over, you were doing keto, and did you jump right into intermittent fasting at that time? Was it January when you also talked to the chiropractor? When was that? How long had you done the keto?
Yeah, so I started doing the keto in January. I think towards the end of February, you know, I was starting to kind of just, I was starting to fade with it a bit. Then something happened that actually, it's probably one of the worst things, but one of the best things as well. It was one of the best things. So, as you mentioned at the start, I'm an actor as well, so I do voiceover and stuff like that. I hadn't done any acting work for quite a while, just because they've got some family stuff and I need to be around for, you know, that sort of thing. But my agent rang me up and he said, look, there's this gig that's come up and I think you'd be spot on for it. So I thought, okay, the money was good, so I thought, okay, I'll go and audition for it. I got the job and they sent me the scripts, and I was basically a dad in two episodes of this new mini series coming out, and it's going to be on Amazon and stuff, and you know, it's like really exciting. I was reading the scripts, and in the second episode, I was required to be in my swimming costume for the whole episode.
Oh!
And my heart just sank. I just thought, oh my, if there's anything I would have wanted least, it's a job where I'm in my swimming costume for a whole episode. And it was like, okay, we have to reset everything, because I was basically booked to go to, I was booked for filming in June. So this was March. The film dates were for June. I thought, right, I've got March, April, May, June. I've got 3 months to sort myself out. I read the Obesity Code and I started listening to your podcasts and read Herring's book. And yeah, it was amazing. Having that nailed on target for June was a real, I was laser focused on that.
That makes sense. So when you were starting off with the intermittent fasting, did you stick to kind of like a 5-hour window? And did you just eat everything at first? Because I know you mentioned cutting out sugar. Was that early in the process or later?
So I would say I was carb conscious more than keto, just because I've gone 19 hours without eating anything. And I've done some exercise, so it's okay. Do you know what I mean? It's okay. And I think the thing that struck me was, firstly, when I realized that it's not a calorie is not a calorie, as in, like, you know, 10 calories of broccoli is not the same as 10 calories of sugar. Your body reacts differently to those two things. Whereas I think there's still a very strong school of thought is that you should only have 1500 calories a day if you want to lose weight. It doesn't matter if that's the gin and tonic and a ham sandwich or a big thing of salad and vegetables and quinoa or whatever. I think once I realized that it's okay to have a mixed diet, it's difficult to restrict, you know, and doing the intermittent fasting, I was finding that hard enough as it was. And I think to also try and pile on the strict ketogenic thing, you've got to be careful because you can set yourself up to fail if you give yourself too big a things to take on. So I just thought, right, don't try and boil the ocean. Just do bucket at a time.
Yeah, I think that's a really important lesson. Don't try to do everything.
My friend who's got diabetes, he keeps trying to do these things where, you know, he won't eat for a week, which is, at the end of it, he just crashes badly. And he goes back to how it was. And I think if you set yourself too high a thing and you crash and burn and fail and you go back to the old way, it almost reinforces it even stronger to go back to that lifestyle, because it's such an enormous relief and source of comfort when you dive back into that food that you were eating, because it makes you feel so good in that instant that I think it reinforces it. So I thought, right, okay, if you're going to do 19 hours a day, don't go through kind of 2 kilograms of Doritos when you're opening your window. Make a smoothie or have some bacon and eggs, just, you know, ease yourself into it. It was really working. And I don't want to kind of sound too evangelical about it, but this has changed how I just do everything. So it's made a real difference. But another thing that really stuck with me was when Bert Herring wrote in his book, like, if you look at the entire living world, right, everything has, like, so animals in kind of African desert or whatever, African savannah, every animal has a bit of fat on it, but not too much to slow it down from running away from something or trying to catch something.
And they all have a natural level that all the animals tend to stick around. There's not like some that are really fat and some that, you know, unless they're starving to death, there will be some that are really skinny. But, you know, they max out at a normal size for their species.
Yeah. And I think his analogy was, it's like, basically, it's like a little thermometer which governs how much you need to eat. You know, you eat to a point, the thermometer gets to the level and you think, okay, that's enough, I'm going to stop. But unfortunately, humans, the thermometer is slightly out, and not for everybody, for people, you know, I know people that are perfectly slim and whatever, and, you know, they eat whatever and they're fine, but I'm not like that. And I thought, okay, so something's out, something's slightly out. And then he kind of, you know, he describes that obviously the way we live our lives is very different to how an animal lives its life. There were lots of mitigating factors there, like, you know, how we work late and how we eat a lot of processed stuff. And I think the key for me was how much processed food I'm eating. I've done a little experiment because, like Jason Fung says, you are the experiment, you know, N equals one. And I did a little experiment just to go back to the filming thing. So when I actually went filming, I think I got away with it. I think I was okay. I put on clothes that weren't fitting me and they all just fit on me. Like, it was fine. And I stood in front of the mirror with my top off and thought, you know what? It's okay. I did press ups every day and stuff like that. So I think I got away with it. But the joy of putting stuff on it that I couldn't fit into, that I hadn't worn for like 5 years, was something else. I just thought, oh my goodness, these trousers fit. In fact, I need a belt for these trousers. Because in January of this year, when I was 118 kilos on that scale, I just thought I'm doomed. You know, this is it. This is just it. This is basically how it's going to be. To be able to step back and release some of that weight was brilliant.
How much did you lose overall?
So now at the moment, and I've put some on actually, to be honest, because I came back from filming. Once I'd finished filming, it was like, okay. You know, my target thing had gone. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, I'll have some cake. Don't need to worry about it anymore. So I got down to 102 kilos. So 60, I dropped 16 kilos, which is actually the other day I went to the pet food shop because I had to get some food. They got these big sacks of dog food that were 15 kilos. And I picked one up and thought, my God, I've lost that. That's incredible.
So I'm trying to do the math here. So that was, you went from in America about 260 pounds down to 225.
Right. Okay.
So about 35 pounds.
And I know I've listened to your podcasts and I know there are people that have lost like a lot more than that. And that is amazing. And seeing the pictures on your Facebook feed, on the Facebook page, it is incredible because it just seems like I said before, it's such an elegant solution to what people think is a catastrophically impossible thing to solve. Everywhere you go now, there's food. Like everywhere you go. You go to the garage to fill up with petrol or gas, I think as you guys call it. And the place is awash with food.
Oh yeah. I mean, in like everything you could imagine. Do you want a hot dog? Do y'all eat hot dogs? What do you call them? Do you have hot?
We call them hot dogs. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They have hot dogs. They have pizza, you know, all the fancy coffees. You can add all your creamer and stuff and literally potato chips everywhere. And yeah.
It's everything. And you know, if you're going on a long drive, I used to do this all the time. I'd fill up the tank, go into the garage, and I'd pick my driving snack selection. Plenty of coffees, diet soda, also, you know, diet Cokes, that sort of thing, because, you know, diet Coke's fine, isn't it? It's no calories. You know, it's easy.
Right, yeah. We all bought into that one.
Yeah. So since then, I've probably put on about 3 kilos, but I was trying a little experiment because I wanted to see in my eating window what would happen if I just go back to my old habit, but just within the 5 hours. So I started eating a lot of packet stuff, making a lot of cakes with flour and sugar and butter and stuff like that, and probably eating too much of it. I found the weight has crept up a little bit because there's something in having refined food. I think the body can't, I think it's almost too much. You know, the body just goes into this kind of emergency mode where it's just the right, you know, and this goes back to what you said as well, these things are individual. There's no pre-described plan that you have to follow rigidly. You've got to work out for yourself what works and what doesn't work. So for me, I mean, I'm good at packing it away. And because I was so, you know, physically active, I thought, well, it's fine. But I found that the older I'm getting, I can't still pack away the cakes and the crisps and all that sort of thing.
Right. Those processed foods. You know, both Fung and Herring talk about, you know, in the Obesity Code and in the Appetite Correction book, they talk about processed foods and how our bodies don't respond well to those. And Fung has a quote that I really like. He says, the poison is in the processing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, people mistakenly think that he thinks everybody should be, you know, low carb, and he doesn't. But although he does put, you know, his diabetic patients and his sickest patients onto the low carb style of eating to help them lower their insulin more quickly. But he's like, you know, foods from nature, people have been eating these foods for thousands of years, you know, vegetables, even potatoes, things like that, whole foods, real foods. But when you take that potato and you slice it thin and mash it up and make a potato chip out of it, fried in these, you know, industrial oils, that's real different.
Yeah, that really struck a chord with me, because I thought, like, so bread, for instance, like, I'm half Serbian, right? So, like, we grew up with, like, bread. If you had there's a Serbian phrase, I think, like, if you've got bread in the house, you're okay. You know what I mean? It's like bread was like a central thing. I was thinking about bread because I thought, I really like bread, but, you know, this kind of school of thought that bread's really bad for you and it's really bad. But I think the difference being that when bread was made, say, 50 years ago, if you make your own bread, I think that's different, because you put, what, flour, salt, yeast, you have to knead it, you've got to put calories into kneading it, and you have to nurture it, and then you have to let it rise. And
are you familiar with my adventures in bread making?
You've actually got me onto buying sourdough from the baker now, as opposed to just the normal stuff in a packet, because I looked at the ingredients I deliberately bought the cheapest loaf of white bread I could get from the supermarket.
You can't even pronounce them.
No. And I thought, oh my goodness, look at all the ingredients in here. And like, I don't know what they are. And you're eating that. I'm thinking, well, does the body know what to do with that stuff?
No, it does not.
Right. And so thinking, well, I'm not going to eat that, but if I really want some bread, and I'm going to get some, I'll go to the local bakery and I'll buy the sourdough stuff that goes off after a day probably, but I know it's been made with fewer ingredients, and I'll get some nice butter and I'll get some cheese and I'll enjoy it. And I will enjoy the flavors and enjoy the experience of eating. And I think here we go, tangent again. This is the thing that really struck me about your book, was that we're only here once, aren't we? Like, I would hate to look back on my life and think, oh, all that time I spent being miserable about food choices I'd made or hadn't made. And I'm thinking, you know what? Just enjoy it. When I say to myself, just enjoy it, it's not stuff yourself with cakes and sweets. It's, if you want to have a cake, have it. But
have a high quality cake, or the best cake you can find. You know, back to the bread, I grind my own wheat into flour now. I'm like milling it. You know, I have a grain mill. And so I start with the whole grains of the wheat, put it into the wheat mill, out comes whole grain flour. You know, none of the parts have been stripped away. And so, you know, every 3 days I make a new batch. And so it's just part of the rhythm of my life now. But, you know, I enjoy that bread so much more. You know, we're only here once. I want to eat the best possible bread that I can eat. And if someone gave me an ultra processed white bread roll, I'd be like, yeah.
Have you got one of those donkeys that walks around in a circle crushing the stone? Like,
no, this one's electric. Ah, right, okay. So if the zombie apocalypse hit and there was no electricity, I'd be in trouble, because I don't do it by hand. It's electric, but yeah.
Well, you'd be all right probably with the cheap white bread, because that stuff doesn't rot, I don't think.
That's true. It would still be around.
I did this experiment where I just thought, right, I'll have all the biscuits I want. In fact, I'll have more biscuits than I want. I'll go through half a packet, because that's what I used to do. And I'll keep eating even though I don't feel particularly hungry, just because it's my window and let's see what happens. So I have found I put a bit of weight on. Also, I do like a glass of wine and a pint of beer, which I think.
Right. Me too. I like my glass of wine.
The trouble is, Jin, I'm one of these people that once I start climbing the mountain, I'm not very good at coming back down again. So like my wife, she can just have a glass of wine. It'll last, you know, the whole evening. She's pretty good like that. Whereas I probably, once I've had the first glass, it's kind of, well, that was nice. Maybe I'll have a second one. And then maybe I'll have a third one. And if it's Friday, you know, I've probably finished the bottle off, to be honest.
Yeah, it's harder to stop. I get it.
No, it is. So, and I'm a little bit like that with a lot of things in my life. Like, we're having the house renovated and I've been putting off kind of clearing all the stuff out from all the rooms. But once I start, then I don't stop. I don't know, the fasting thing as well. One thing I've got much better at is clearing out just clutter. I do a lot of clutter clearing now.
It feels good, right?
Yeah, much to the annoyance of my other half, because she's now complaining that I'm chucking too much stuff out. I want clean surfaces and the bare minimum. I realise, kind of, you know, this story about these sort of Tibetan monks who, they have no possessions. They've just got no possessions whatsoever. And I'm starting to think, wow, how spiritually kind of light must they feel, you know, having no stuff. We have got a lot of stuff in our house, you know, drawers full of sort of foreign currency, batteries and pens.
Right. Just junk that you've kept. We just moved from one house to another house. And, you know, I got to touch every bit of my junk personally, you know, all of it. And I got rid of as much as I could. Although I have to be careful, just like your wife is like, don't throw that away. That's my husband. You know, I have to like secretly throw things away when he's not looking, like in the neighbor's trash can.
Yeah. I was not like that before I started doing this way of life, this fasting. Because I think there's something about, you know, when you're in a permanently sort of fed state, you've had breakfast, you have your snack about 11, you have lunch about 1, have a slump snack at 3, get home at 5, pick at something, eat at about 7. Your digestive system is so overworked all the time. You don't really want to do anything else.
It's like you're sleepwalking through the day.
And I've just found I just want to do more stuff. Like, I've even bought a new desk for my office where you can actually stand up at it. So it's got a handle. You can like, if you can raise it up to like, you know, waist height, so you can actually stand up. And even just doing that, just standing kind of engages a few of the more muscles than before.
And you have so much energy that it feels good to stand up rather than sitting. Like you just have to go do something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's probably a slightly maybe hindrance, but is that I am now just a fidget. I cannot sit still. I'm not very good at sitting still and just watching TV, unless I'm having a glass of wine. In which case, I'm very happy just to sit there and keep something up. But if I'm not having a glass of wine, I've got to go out and do something. Go to the gym. One thing, I've got a black Labrador, and we'll go for long walks, which I absolutely love. And that's the other thing. Exercise, right? I've always loved doing exercise because of the way it makes you feel. But I am an inherently lazy person, and I think the thing that really struck me as well, that I read it, Jason Fung, I think Bert Herring touched on it, was if there's something you like doing, then do it. Don't think you have to go to spin class or you have to go to circuit training or you have to go and lift weights in some steroid-enhanced gym or whatever and make yourself miserable doing exercise. If you've liked going for long walks or swimming, anything you like doing, you should do it, because you've got more of a chance of keeping that going than forcing yourself to go to the gym. I mean, I personally find gyms just mindless, because I just you know, I love going walking, I love cycling, and I love swimming, because it just makes me feel, you're just using your instrument, aren't you? Your body is an instrument and you're using it.
Yeah, I feel the same way about the gym. And I, you know, I tried really hard. I don't know if you heard me talk about it on my podcast. I tried to go to the gym early in 2019. I started in late 2018, started going, I was doing Pilates, and I tried a bunch of exercise classes. And, you know, I really liked the people and it was interesting. And then I got so bored. Even though the class was different every time, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And instead, I'd rather scrub the bathroom, you know, and have a nice clean bathroom. And that's physical activity. I'd rather polish the silver, stay active that way.
I gave myself a little target every day. So like at the beginning of the year, I hadn't done any exercise for a while. And I thought, right, how many push-ups can I do? And I think I could do about I could do like, I did 10 and it was like, I was struggling. I thought, this is pathetic. I thought, right, okay, every morning I'm going to get up and I'm going to do 5 push-ups whilst the shower is getting warm. I'm just going to do five. That's all, 5. And I did that every day, just 5. And then after, I think, 2 weeks, I thought, right, I'll do 6. And then now I'm up to 46. So it's, I mean, I'm getting a bit, to be honest, I'm getting a bit, sometimes I don't feel like doing it because it's quite an effort. But for me, it was like, I've tried to do things like at full tilt straight away. But I think what I've learned, what I've had to understand is start by doing the 5 push-ups a day, have 2 cups of water a day. And I never used to drink any water. I used to drink Diet Coke all the time. Just have 2 cups of water every day. Delete 5 emails every day. Just little things. And get them to be a habit. Because basically, it's taken me probably 47 years to realize that nothing changes if nothing changes. Which sounds sort of obvious, really, I know. But I think I've only just kind of worked that out.
Right. But you don't have to try to change it all at once, which I love. You do a little bit here. Like with someone starting off with intermittent fasting, don't try to do, you know, like someone will come into the groups. They're like, I read the book. I'm so excited. I'm going to start with 1 meal a day and tomorrow I'm going to have a 1-hour window. I'm like, wait, no, don't start there. Ease in, change a little.
I think that would be really difficult if you are somebody that, you know, you're eating all day, whatever. And well, for me, I think the first couple of weeks was like, I had to use a lot of distraction techniques, go out for a walk, do something other than be near the kitchen, because I was quite ready to demolish whatever was in front of me. It's probably took me a good 20 years to get to this size. You're not going to lose it in 2 months. You have to kind of be kind to yourself.
Now I have a question for you. You said your brother first mentioned intermittent fasting to you 5 or 6 years ago. Did he stick with it?
He did for about a year and he looked incredible on it. He looks really good. But I think it's a bit like going for a run or doing exercise. Once you get used to doing it, it's not as difficult. But I think there are reasons, there are all sorts of reasons to not do it. And it can be easy to not do it, I think. That's the other thing. For me anyway, I could probably not do it if I didn't put my mind to it and just eat. Because sometimes I miss breakfast cereal. Sometimes I miss a big bowl of muesli in the morning. Sometimes And I know I can have it later on if I wanted to, but I guess it's maintaining that focus. Like, nope, I'll have it at 2 o'clock. Nope, I'll have it at 2 o'clock. I say he stopped after a bit and he put it back on.
The thing that helps me maintain it is whenever I take a day off for a special occasion, I had a brunch that I went to on Sunday of this week. It was at a hotel and it was a really high quality brunch and it was definitely worth eating. So I opened my window at the brunch. I probably ate at 9 in the morning, which is very early for me. And on the way home in the car, I was like needing a nap. Luckily, I was not driving. But my husband was driving, but I needed a nap. And I like took a little nap at like 11 in the morning. I'm napping. And then the whole rest of the day, my thoughts were consumed with food, whereas they aren't usually. So that's what keeps me living the intermittent fasting lifestyle. You know, how I feel when I don't do it.
We went on holiday to an all-inclusive for 4 days. And that was like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And my God, did I get my money's worth, I tell you. But it did not bring out the best in me, I have to say, Jen, because each meal involved probably about 3 or 4 trips up to the enormous array of food that was available. And it was all amazing and delicious. And you could have as much of it as you liked. And there was probably 4 different cuisines there. And at the end of the day, I would feel almost ill from the amount I'd eaten. After those 4 days, I said to my mother, I said, I'm having a break. I'm not going to eat tomorrow. 6 months ago, that would have been like an alien concept. But now it's just like, it's okay. It's fine.
It feels good to get back to the fasting. You're like, oh, thank goodness.
Totally. This is it for me. I cannot see why I would not choose to live this way, because it's a very elegant solution. There's no, you don't buy anything. You don't have to do anything. You just don't eat and you just drink water. And you've converted me to black coffee and the nitro thing. I hate black coffee. I could not drink black coffee, but my taste buds have changed. And I know I'm gassing on here, but two things that I want to, I got a black coffee the other day and I was drinking it thinking, oh, the woman's put milk in it by accident. And I opened it up and she hadn't.
You're just so used to it. Yeah.
That was a real revelation for me. And fizzy water has now become my Diet Coke.
I have a San Pellegrino right here beside me now.
Yeah. I've got something similar where it's, yeah, it's a, like a local, but it's transformed, it's changed how I taste stuff. And I had some Oreos that I shouldn't, maybe, you know, other biscuits are available, but I had some Oreos at a friend's house and they tasted weirdly chemical. And that was a first for me. That was a first. So stuff is changing. Things are happening. And it's quite exciting.
It really is. Now, we are out of time. I have just really so enjoyed talking to you. But before we go, one last thing I always like to ask, what advice would you give someone just starting off? Or what do you wish you knew when you began in like 60 seconds or less?
Take it steady. Be kind to yourself. Start with an 8-hour window and eat well in that 8-hour window. Don't expect miracles to happen overnight. They don't. If you fall off the wagon, you can't do it, don't worry about it. Tomorrow's another day. Just get up, try again the next day. Have a look at your Delay, Don't Deny book. Look at the videos that Jason Fung talks about fasting and read the Bert Herring book, because they are all simple, easy to understand, and they all just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think so too. And after reading both the Appetite Correction book and the Obesity Code, I was inspired to add more real foods, more high quality foods to my diet. And it really made a difference in just the way you feel. So you're back to now eating more of the high quality foods?
Yeah, last few days I've just been eating food that is not processed. It doesn't come out of a packet. I've just, you know, and it just stabilizes the hunger pangs. You don't get the kind of lurches of sort of agonizing hunger where you've got to eat something immediately. It just, things just stabilize and it's very freeing and liberating.
It really is. Well, on that note, Alex, I would like to say thank you for talking to me today, and I will see you around.
Thanks, Jen. Thank you very much for your time.
Do you have an intermittent fasting story to tell? Email me at jen@intermittentfastingstories.com, and I'll add you to the lineup. That's GIN@intermittentfastingstories.com. The world wants to hear your story. That's it for today. Remember, I may have a doctorate, but I'm not a medical doctor. So don't use anything you hear on this podcast as a substitute for medical advice. Please always check with your doctor or healthcare provider if you have medical questions. I'll talk to you next week, Fasting Family, where we will hear another inspiring story. Have a great week and fast on. Intermittent Fasting Stories is edited, mixed, and mastered by Resonate Recordings. To learn more, visit them at resonaterecordings.com or email them at hello@resonaterecordings.com. Intermittent Fasting Stories listeners will receive a free offer if you mention that you heard it on the podcast.